Welcome back to the Equity Matters podcast. This is Charles Addis, JB3, and it is time for a new episode. This week on the podcast, we're talking about children's mental health. And part of the reason why this episode came to be, in part because I knew it was long overdue for me to get Bass on the pod, is I attended the Michigan Health Policy Forum earlier this month, and the topic was just this. And we were talking about the crisis that's taking place within our country as it relates to children and their mental health and emotional development. And of course, the concept of adverse childhood experiences came up, but there was a renewed focus on just the pressures that children face. And of course, you know, me being a parent, I'm slowly starting to see some of the things that children are exposed to, whether it be in the classroom or in other social settings, that can impact their emotional well-being. I recall as a child myself, I can say that I was bullied now because I'm in therapy and I've processed it, but there were countless moments where people would find a reason to make fun of you or would go out of their way to talk about you. And those things are hard for kids who don't have the resilience or the ability to respond in a way that protects them. And recently, one of my boys was telling me about the Black Habit. And I had never heard of this term, and it might not even be a real term, but he was talking about when he feels overwhelmed, it's the Black Habit taking over. And of course, me being a parent, I'm trying to be responsive and listen, but man, it was some deep stuff. And so the takeaway that I'll give here is listen to your kids, because they're trying to tell you something. Even if they don't have all the words, they're saying something. So let's get to today's episode. So an additional disclaimer, I use the term undocumented in today's episode. And I've had a chance to do a little bit of reading since I've recorded it. And I feel like that's still not the best term to use. And I refer to folks as undocumented immigrants. And as I'm doing research and trying to learn more and lean into my misunderstanding here, I see that there's other terms that are better used. So what I ask is that you offer me grace as you're listening and understand that, of course, I'm still trying to do the work to learn to use the right terminology. If you have better words, please send them my way. I am open to hearing that. I'm open to that feedback. And so let's dive into today's episode. So you're going to hear from Bass, right? You all know Bass, right? Bass is a fellow social worker, a fellow podcaster. He hosts the Social Work Prance podcast, and he was previously employed in the schools. And so as a school social worker, we had a conversation about what it was like to work with children whose parents were at risk for being deported or being detained, and what kind of pressures come with that. And so I'm excited to introduce you all to Basiliso Moreno. Bass, take it away.
Hi, first off, thank you for having me on. Like you said, my name is Basiliso Moreno. Everybody calls me Bass for short. Originally from the Boogie Down Bronx, born and raised, now currently resided in Middletown, Delaware. I currently work as a school social worker in the Middletown area. Been working there since January of this year, working as a temporary school social worker until the end of the school year. End of the school year is last day for the kiddos is tomorrow, the 11th. I'm excited as a parent that I survived, and they survived the whole virtual learning on Zoom. And my last day is the 15th, so I'm looking forward to having a first time ever a summer vacation of doing nothing.
Just out of curiosity, you go from Boogie Down Bronx,
yes,
to Delaware. What was that like for you?
Not as crazy as it sounds. It was actually a 2020 goal to move down here. Now I've been actually, you know, doing my homework and checking out the market since I want to say like 2017. You know, my fiance has family down here, so like we spent like Thanksgiving and Christmases, you know, down here, just checking out the area. And like her sister-in-law is like trying to entice me to move down here and seeing all the like the new construction that was building in the area. I was like, oh, like I could like see myself living down here. Like it's nice. Like I was tired of the noise, tired of the like the ruckus, just all like the nonsense that it is in the hood for the most part, and just looking for like, you know, I'm about to be 42, so I'm like, I can't do this noise anymore. I'm tired of taking a 4 train and as much as I like the Yankees, I'm a Yankee fan. I can't stand Yankee fans during rush hour on the 4 train while I'm trying to get home and relax from a long day of work. But you know, it was time to transition. I was looking for like a new challenge. And, like I had met a realtor in 2017 and she got her license here in Delaware, and like following her on Instagram, and she's posting stuff of houses that's available and, you know, relatively cheap, definitely cheaper than in New York and New York Tri-State area. And I was like, oh shit, like I could like really like, you know, not only like afford it, but you know, or you know, get a mortgage and stuff and like be comfortable, but you know, it's nice, it's clean, like new, like it's just something I wanted to do. And really it kind of like everything kind of like the roller coaster really started happening once like July 4th of 2020. Like my fiance's brother was like, you know, y'all could stay with us until y'all find your own spot. So literally I was like every weekend going visiting the kids. Like the kids came down first with my fiance during the summer, and then I was like seeing them on the weekends, taking Amtrak back and forth to New York while I was still working in New York. And then I literally October 19th was like my last day working in New York, and that afternoon once 5 o'clock hit, I had like my big duffel bag and my suitcase and took the Amtrak and went to Delaware, and literally the next day started a new job for a couple of months in Delaware until the school social work thing. They called me, did 2 interviews, and they're like, we hire you as a temp social worker. And literally had everybody who unfortunately like lost their jobs or got furloughed, like I literally had like 2 jobs in social work during the pandemic, plus another job that I was offered but didn't take due to like my own values of what the job entailed. I wasn't feeling it. So literally like 3 job offers like in the last like year and a half. So it was blessed, lucky, you know, everything, just leave it in God's hands. And no family, with family support, and just making the move and transition, and it's been great so far. Like I'm trying to get my dad to come down here. That's, you know, being a caretaker of elderly parent is, I think it's been like the hardest job, more harder than probably any social work job that I've had, and I've had some tough ones. So you know, dealing with old school Puerto Rican parents, and you know, my mom got rest of soul, you know, passed away last year, but you know, dealing with her as well was not easy as well. So not having my dad and like come down and like showing him pictures and like me like cutting grass for the first time and like all different things that of that nature, you know, coming with the territory of being a homeowner, and like, you got to come down and you visit and you like it, like, you know, just we can find doctors for you and doing the care coordination that we social workers do, and like finding doctors and, you know, entitlement changeovers and do all those things that we social workers do for our clients. Gonna have to do it for like my dad whenever he finally make that move.
So let's talk a little bit about your role as a school social worker, right? And when we first connected, you definitely put a very specific lens on the way that you wanted to frame this conversation. And so the first question is, you know, tell us about being a school social worker in the shadow of the Trump presidency. Because just knowing the misogyny, the racism, the classism, the xenophobia, like all the things, what is that like in the school setting?
When I first the job I had before I started the school social work, I learned about Delaware, even though Joseph Robinette Biden, our current president, is from here. 45 to 48%, I don't know if that's the actual number, but I heard it's like 45-48% of Delawareans voted for Trump, even though President Biden won his state. You know, that's a huge number. If you're from here, and so like almost half of the population voting for Trump, that tells a story there. When I first started visiting, you know, at least more consistent going to back and forth to New York to Delaware during the summer and the fall, there's this one house that has a barn on the highway, and I called it the worst looking house in Delaware, because the guy who owns the barn had Trump, the last name Trump, on the roof of his barn in white lettering. There's a red barn, and then the roof is white Trump in white lettering. I was like, what the heck?
Right.
So between that and then literally the train station in Wilmington is named after President Biden. And in the store, the only store that's open in the train station was selling Trump merchandise. Like literally on the table, you got like one side Trump stuff, memorabilia, like hats, Make America Great hats and all this other stuff. And then on the side, you have Biden, like the freaking train station is named after Biden. You're selling Trump stuff. And so like stuff like that, like really saw a lot. And like even on the highway driving, you saw more Trump 2020 posters than Biden's. Like I literally could count on one hand the number of Biden Harris 2020 posters on the highways. Definitely maybe like a 10-minute drive from like where I was staying at, there was like a big house and just had like a Trump flags around. So you saw a lot of that. So regarding the school social work thing, literally I started January 4th, which is also my daughter's birthday. So she had turned 9. I was like, she was a little upset that I had to like go into work first day on her birthday. But I was like, I'll be home later and we celebrate your birthday. So literally January 6th was the terrorists, that I call them, go to the Capitol. I didn't really hear anything until my soon-to-be brother-in-law, he came out of his office from a Zoom meeting. He was like, do you see what's going on in the Capitol? I'm like, no. Like, usually I'm on Twitter or most of the day or and like nothing like really jumped out at me, and they're like, no, what's going on? So you put on CNN and then you see everybody, you know, storming the Capitol and all everything that happened that day. So luckily for me, my social work team, my immediate social work team, so I'm one of five social workers, the other four are African American, of some sort of African American descent. So Luckily, we had a good talk about, you know, what happened. I think it was either the next day we talked or like the following week, we had like our own like kind of like group supervision and kind of, and we, you know, we luckily for me, like kind of share like the similar values or, you know, I was, you know, fucked up, what happened, how can they do that? Like, you know, hopefully they catch these guys and like ID them and put them in jail, like, oh, you know, all that stuff, not like a pro, nothing pro Trump. Like, we can, neither one of us can't really like stand him. So, but so that was literally 2 days into my brand new role. So, like my immediate supervisor, he was on like paternity leave. So, really, I had like my coworkers kind of like helping me along the way for most of my role. So like I haven't really had gotten into like going to the schools yet. Like little by little, like after January 6th was like going into the school buildings, anything like that. So in terms of like the actual school buildings, school settings, I really didn't see anything related to any, you know, Trump stuff or like the aftermath of that. It was just, you know, meeting with the kids and getting referrals and kind of like learning as I go what I needed to do in the role.
And working in Delaware, you mentioned there's a high Latino population with a fear of deportation, right? And how does this show up in the classroom with students specifically?
Well, I learned that even the area where I live at, they're out there. They're like few and far between, but there's enough out there still migrating into you know, the U.S. So had a couple cases where I had to register the kids into our school system, helping, you know, the parents out to you know, do the registration. And you know, identifying that you know, the parents, usually it's just the mom, unable to read and write in Spanish. So even they would get their documentation in Spanish, and then seeing like, I had this one parent, she doesn't even know how to like sign her name. So any like consent forms or anything like that, she wasn't able to sign it. So that comes to show you how, like, you know, the education system in whatever countries they're coming from is definitely lackluster, for lack of a better word. They're coming in a brand new country, brand new situation, you know, trying to look for work at the same time, you know, navigating, you know, the school system and with these kids. And then had just one family. They had like one kid went to one school, had another kid going to another school, older kid went to like a third school. And so it was just like trying to navigate, helping, and each one of them had their own needs and trying to help the kids out, while also try to help mom out and try to go around around mom's work schedule was difficult as well in terms of getting what I needed to get done in terms of the work, but while assisting parents. Like I said before, because we're still in a pandemic, I wasn't trying to go to inside the schools as much as I would like to, or had wanted to, or probably based on what my role like needed to, just for my own safety. You know, with the pandemic going on and stuff like that. And like I think the school district went through 3 or 4 different schedule changes as, you know, the COVID restrictions kind of eased a little bit. They did like a hybrid model and realized there were a lot of kids, you know, missing class or on the verge of failing. So they wanted to open up the schools and have kids come in 4 days out the week. So there was a big push of that. That made my anxiety even higher. I was like, okay, these kids are coming into the buildings. Let me try to go to the school buildings during like off peak hours where like you know, it's not lunchtime. I'm able to, like, to go to the main office and really only interact who I needed to really interact with, and kind of only do home visits, you know, as needed. And luckily, families have been very gracious. So, like, I wasn't going inside people's houses. Like, I'll meet you in the garage area, or I'll meet you like kind of like outside of the doorway of the house. So we kind of look like Californians during the earthquake and be outside like the doorway area again, protecting ourselves from like an earthquake or something like that. So just being out in the open area and having, you know, a conversation, like, since it's pretty open, so like I didn't have to worry about, you know, speaking loudly to break any like HIPAA violation or anything like that. So like the families that I've been work with were pretty cool for the most part in terms of, you know, respecting my boundaries or not going inside people's houses. And, you know, I still have my mask on and try to keep my at least 6 feet from them and having the conversations.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to give up my 6 feet at this point. Like, I need all the space.
I tell my podcast, like, at minimum, like, 6 feet. Like, I was trying to advocate for, like, 10 feet at least, but six feet is not, it's still too close.
Yeah, for real. If you can you offer any examples on how deportation has dissolved, like, family networks or family relationships?
Luckily for me, the families that I was referred to, nobody was deported, even though they're still at risk of being having deportation, having ICE come in. So, you know, really, my role when I was doing home visits, like first I would make a phone call, like, hey, introduce myself, I'm so and so from the district. Call a reference to, you know, your child regarding schoolwork or attendance, or has some like paperwork that I need to discuss with you, and then like go out to the home and like, hey, I'm the one who called you. I'm so and so. Like, we spoke on the phone, and so kind of like, you know, building rapport, you know, building the trust, you know, with the families. And there was a few families I'm literally was seeing them on a weekly basis, and, you know, providing a free food that the district would give out on Wednesdays. And so I'd like go to a school and pick up the food and take to the family, and just kind of like just building rapport that way, and trying to like build trust that way. At least they would open the door for me or anybody that they would know. So I don't know, I was told when I first started that a lot of our Spanish speaking families are like really in fear of having ICE knocking on the door and, you know, deportation. But like I didn't see that, you know, for myself. You know, I had a good experience, you know, with the families I was working with. Yes, there's always going to be, you know, still like some fear, especially when you're still trying to transition into the neighborhood while you're still trying to work and kids, and definitely seeing like a kind of a new generation of latchkey kids being home alone, trying to learn how to be responsible, being on a Zoom call when nobody's watching you, and then like hearing from the school that they're not attending class, and then, well, yeah, they're not attending class because they have no parent in the house. The parents working and try to, you know, maintain a household, and, you know, the kids gonna be kids. They're not gonna unless you tell them. They're not gonna go on Zoom for class. It's just like before pandemic, like I don't want to go to school, so kids would either like skip school or whatever. So it's just like another way of technology. Like, I'm not going to school today, so you either go on Zoom or you don't. So it was just, and then like there was kind of no way to really enforce like a attendance. Like there's only so much like myself as a school social worker could do in terms of attendance. Like just go on Zoom, like you could be turn your camera on and, you know, make sure you look kind of like halfway decent to turn the camera on, and just sit and listen for from whatever time you start to whatever time you finish, and that's it, and just do your work. But it was just a crazy, crazy time.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. What are some of the short-term and long-term effects of children of undocumented immigrants living with that fear?
I mean, the kids that I would work, was working with, they're pretty, resilient for the most part. I didn't really see a fear of, are we, is they're going to take my mom, or they're going to come, anything like that. Like the kids I work with, they were going to do their best to try to, eventually most of them ended up going to school for the hybrid model. And went to school, came home, like on Wednesdays, we have what's called a synchronous day, and it has a parent. I couldn't stand Wednesdays because the kids were already done with their work by 11:30, and what the hell are you going to do? I'm going to do with these kids for the rest of the day if they're already done with schoolwork at 11:30, 12 o'clock. But trying to assist with the kids from going out doing home visits, and okay, there's no Zoom on Wednesdays. This is literally the conversation I'm having. So there's an app called Schoolology, and all your work is on that app, and trying to teach them how to navigate that app so they could do their work and be marked present for the day with school while they're doing their work. So and just try to show them on their iPad how to navigate that. So they were more worried about trying to do their schoolwork than anything else. And once they were going to school in person, to more worried about catching their bus so that they're not late for school, or might end up missing school because they missed the bus, and anything in terms of immigration or any sort of immigration policies. Now, after 5 o'clock, when they were home with their parents and until they go to sleep, maybe that's a different story. But when I'm out there doing home visits, dropping food off, or an occasional school visits, I don't really see that.
So let's get a little bit deeper into your role in all of this. And what role do you play in increasing access to mental health services, whether that's for parents or for children?
Definitely I identified there's a really lack of resources in my own community. Pretty much, especially for our Spanish-speaking families, usually had to refer clients out to Wilmington, where there's more of a urban area, more diverse area of African American and Latinos. There's a whole social service area by the train station in Wilmington. So all the social services stuff is over there, and families not having vehicles to drive over there for services, and when stuff opened up, things made it more difficult. How am I going to refer families for whether it be for counseling? You don't have insurance, or you could do a self pay, but you don't have no money for self pay. You're just covering basic basic needs for yourself and your kids. So it just made it really, really difficult. That's a major transition that really took a while to coming from New York, where you pretty much, other than housing, you could pretty much get any type of service that you need pretty much around the clock, to come to Delaware and be in a smaller state. Really not having as much resources for families, not necessarily just Spanish-speaking families, but just families overall. There's a housing need down here as well. There's You know, there is one shelter in my area, and it's pretty much kind of pretty full for the most part. So, you know, as we see moving forward, you know, people who lost their jobs and like these referendums of housing start to ease up, and we're going to see more and more evictions. You know, that's I see that being a future problem coming up for this upcoming school year. Moving forward, more and more people in need of housing, and there's really like in New York when I was dealing with wasn't much housing. So coming down here, I feel like it's going to be as bad down here as well in terms of mental health. I did make a couple of mobile crisis referrals for kids. And, you know, really because of the pandemic, they only could do so much in terms of visitation. They try to do, you know, kind of like Zoom links and things of that nature. So like that pandemic really kind of like messed a lot of things up for a lot of different services. And hopefully, you know, through the summer and the fall, things will kind of like pick up a little bit as long as our cases are down and people act right during the summer, like things could kind of like go back to somewhat normal pre-pandemic, you know, coming up in the fall.
I remember life before the pandemic, vaguely. It was cool though. Like I remember going outside and not being concerned about the people around me in that way anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
How are you able to communicate like this role to your colleagues who may disagree due to cultural differences, right? Because one of the things that stands out to me is growing up in Detroit, a lot of my teachers look like me. And I imagine a lot of the teachers out there don't look like the students. And so
how don't do look you, like me either.
Yeah, right, right. So how do you articulate like, hey, your approach might not be doing the best good right now?
Man, my Zoom calls with the different schools, I pretty much stick out like a sore thumb, being one of the maybe few males in the Zoom call. Definitely the only, maybe another Spanish-speaking person, Spanish-speaking person is definitely a lighter skin tone than I am. In terms of having those type of conversations, like it really didn't play too much, not in my work. I mean, like I said, I've only been there since January, and just I spend a lot of time like working from home. A lot of times just making phone calls, follow-up phone calls with the families that I've been referred to. So I've pretty much been working with the same families for the most part the whole time I've been working with the district. But definitely like from time to time, maybe on a Zoom call, maybe letting you know, staff know, maybe you know, a cultural piece might play into this role or a certain situation, but it was few and far in between. Like it wasn't a consistent basis.
And better yet, thinking
maybe if I was there like the full school year, like while you know, Trump was still the president, from September to January, maybe I might have seen a little bit more. Like getting like the inside scoop a little bit more of how people might treat certain individuals differently because of everything that's been going on the past year and a half. But from January to current, I really didn't see too much regarding anything like that, especially working with our Latino population.
Thinking long-term, and I guess short-term also, how do we disrupt the trauma that goes with just this fear of deportation, especially if this goes to show how children see themselves and what opportunities are available to them.
I mean, this country definitely has to come up with some policy in terms of some sort of immigration policy that really works. I don't know what that would look like, but something needs to be done. And, you know, we've had so many presidents just to talk about that and nothing is really going to get done. I don't know if there's a summit that needs to happen with whoever our president is, well, currently is Biden, but just like long-term, whoever the president is going to be, having conversations with presidents, so, you know, with Mexico and South America, maybe come up with some agreement or something regarding immigration, having families coming up this way. That, you know, something needs to be done. I don't know what that is. So, I mean, if there is something in place, then it might ease some of the fears. Okay, like, I'm here, I could work and just live a life like anybody else as much as possible. I mean, like, I'm still new to the area, so like I know the mayor of my town. He's been the mayor here for like 30 years, and he just like won re-election again right before I moved to my current address. So I'm still learning what goes down in my town. I just met like the one of the main sergeants of the police department recently, so I'm looking forward to trying to reach out to him just to learn more about like the neighborhood, more about like the area. That way, moving forward, like for myself, and just navigating with my two kids within the school system better, and participating in school board meetings at least. If they stop doing Zoom calls with the school board meetings, maybe like attend them in person and just see some of the crazy dumb stuff that they do in person, and maybe have a voice in saying something with them, and just definitely, like I said earlier, there's definitely a need for mental health resources, just resources in this area, just in general, but for Latino families that continue to come in here. More and more people are starting to learn about Delaware and wanting to move down here. I'm like Tupac when he signed to Death Row and like trying to get like come to Death Row, and he's like throwing the money out. Like, I'm trying to have like, that's me with my friends, like, come to Delaware, like, you get more bang for your buck. So it there's always like new developments, buildings. So the population is going to increase. The school district is opening up two brand new schools in the fall. So in total, the district is going to have 20 total buildings with kids from pre-K all the way to high school. So, and obviously many of those kids are going to be, African-American and Latino kids. So I would hope the school district would have some sense and provide some supports for us of color in the community.
Unless as a systemic issue, I've got a process. How do we go about addressing like the broader discrimination, racism, and racial profiling that comes with families who are undocumented? I mean, there's tons of stigma even before they come here about what to expect once you're there. And then the second part to that is, how do we go about strengthening the trust and service providers? Because I mean, I started off in child welfare. And
yes, so did I.
Yeah, so you already know how people perceive when you knock on the door. They know who you are. They know what you're there to do. They don't want to talk to you about help because you're typically not there to help them. Mm. So how do we go about kind of changing that narrative and also changing the way that we practice?
I mean, pretty much like currently from what I see, there's a huge population of from Guatemala that I've been working with. Pretty much a lot of my Spanish speaking families are from Guatemala just by chance. So just like the old school stigma of like they used to call like everybody who speaks Spanish just back in the days, that's you're Mexican. Like, no, like I'm Puerto Rican, I'm Dominican, I'm Cuban, I'm like Colombian, Ecuadorian. So just like there's still, you know, kind of like that aspects, you know, still around. You know, I was hoping after Hurricane Maria that, you know, after the hurricane, people didn't realize until then that Puerto Rico was part of the United States and that Puerto Ricans were automatically American citizens. And there's people till this day, like years later after the hurricane, that still don't know Puerto Ricans are automatically American citizens. So it's just education, definitely having like, you know, African American history and Latino history more in the textbooks. However, textbooks are going to look like, whether it be ebooks or still textbooks, you know, moving forward. Just having our histories, having you know, stopping these laws with these states, trying to erase like our history, and you know, our history needs to be told. You know, pretty much most of a population, at least for myself and my family and a lot of my friends and family, I pretty much can guarantee our original ancestors come from some sort of from some part of Africa and like moving forward and other parts of the world. So like, you know, that history needs to be taught. And you know, unfortunately, we've seen a lot of these states, you know, not talk about, you know, African American history. You know, the 100th anniversary of Black Wall Street just recently happened. On Memorial Day, and June 1st. So you know, people still don't know about that. And people, even within the own city of Tulsa, doesn't like talking about that. So just, you know, things like that that needs to be shared. And you know, America has, as much as we like to be patriotic and I love this country and blah, 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 you know, to be patriotic, all that stuff. Like we, you know, the Constitution was not written for, based on Latinos and African Americans and LGBTQ community, or for women, for that matter. It was just a bunch of white men doing the Declaration of Independence and just thinking of their own objectives and stuff like that. So people need to stop with the nonsense and like need to get us together. We live in a melting pot in this country. You know, it's not just, you know, Latinos that's migrating into the country. There's also many others that are coming into the country. So we need to stop just singling out Latinos that are coming from South America into the country, or from Mexico coming into the country. Yes, because they're closest. You know, we want to focus on that, but you know, there's so many other groups of people, you know, coming in illegally. You know, they need to be discussed as well. And it's kind of funny, you know, there's so many, you know, more news outlets than ever before, and it still is. They only want to talk about the same topics, pretty much. So just media needs to change. You know, how we discuss histories of Black and brown people from the world in this country needs to be changed in our books. And really, you know, it kind of starts there first, and hope, and in terms of immigration, it definitely needs to be a real comprehensive immigration policy to kind of like if that's out there, I think it'd just be a little easier for whoever does, who already is here illegally, to just trying to live as normal of a life as possible.
So Baz, definitely appreciate the time. Let folks know the best way to keep up with you and your podcast, because you mentioned that earlier, but I don't know if everyone knows that you're a podcaster as well. And just some of the work that you're doing.
Yes. So people also know me as the Social Work Rants podcast. I usually drop episodes every Friday at 9 a.m. For the month of June, I'm trying to do celebrate Father's Day all month long. So I'm looking for additional dads who are in social work to come on the podcast and just how they navigate being social workers, mental health professionals, and being parents at the same time. So I already have interviewed two social workers. Looking to interview some more dads out there. Yes, I've been doing I'm in the podcast game since January 2020. It's been slow and steady. People have been hitting me up, really supporting the podcast, and been appreciative of all the love and support. So you can follow me on Instagram as the Social Work Rants Podcast. That's all one word. I'm also on Twitter at Social Work Rants. The Twitter following is slowly coming along as well. I got more on the podcast Twitter than my own personal Twitter. So I'm also a licensed Zumba instructor. I've been a Zumba instructor, at least license-wise, since December 2018. Looking to restart teaching. I haven't really taught a class since the very beginning of March, maybe late February of 2020. So I'm looking into, doing that, try to somehow get back into shape and drop some of this since quarantine weight. Looking to get into that, doing virtual classes online. I have a website, is bassmoreno.com. So you can find information on that. Also have a virtual IG page. My business page is Bass City Entertainment LLC. That's all one word. So it's a self-care company, small business that I started. I'm also in the process of writing my first ebook, poetry spoken word ebook, just based on my thoughts and feelings of everything that I've been through during the pandemic. I just started writing off the top of my head and started making sense, and just things started happening, life started happening, and I started writing. So in terms of self-care, I was doing that, so I'll be releasing that soon. I'm hoping by the end of the summer I could release that ebook, and I'll be selling that off my website as well.
Man, you are busy.
I'm trying to, especially with this free time. Once the 15th happens, I need to start getting cracking on this small business.
Hey, that's what it's there for, but it's work.
Yeah, it's work, definitely.
Yeah. Bass, definitely appreciate you hopping on the cast, man. I think there's a lot to learn when it comes to school social workers and just the role that they play kind of in the system, understanding the communities around them, understanding the assets that the children have, and how to create an environment that best supports them. So thank you for the work that you do. And
thank you.
Good luck to you in this upcoming school year.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to the challenge as a parent in navigating this upcoming school year.
Thanks again, Bass, for joining us on the Equity Matters podcast. My takeaway here, and I think I teased it earlier, is listen to your children. They have something that they're trying to communicate. If we're talking about in the mental health space, they may conceptualize it differently than we do because we have the words and the tools to help paint that picture. I also want to just take a moment here to acknowledge that I've had like two or three episodes that were also Jay-Z songs. I'm not that big of a Jay-Z head, at least not new venture capitalist Jay-Z. So if you notice, they're older songs. Just point that out. A few quick things I want to run through. So we had our first Brothers in Social Work Collective meeting, You Good Bro, with Wayne State, and it was so well received. The conversation was authentic. People were able to show up and be themselves. We were able to have discussions that you can't typically have in other spaces. So if you want in on Brothers in Social Work Collective, I'm telling you now, reach out to us now, because 2023 is going to be busy. If you want us to come facilitate, if you want keynote speakers, if you want a panel, holler at us now, because 23 booked and busy. Okay, I'm telling you now, don't say I didn't warn you when you can't get a hold of us. Just saying. Another hot topic, right? I want to talk about Kanye West. Now, you all know that I tend to not keep up with the current events on the podcast because I have this fear of becoming like the other podcasters. This fear of becoming mundane. I'm not really into pop culture like that. And I also just don't want to be another guy with a microphone because they're dangerous. But I would be remiss if I did not talk about Mr. West. So what I want to say is that what he has said, what he has gone on the record of saying, is hurtful, is in many cases false. And I think what I'm glad to see is that he's being held accountable for his actions. I will say that. Because that is the first step in finding justice. That's also the first step in exploring liberation, because we don't know what that looks like yet. But I also want to point out this double-edged sword that appears here. And the fact that Kanye has been anti-black for a while now, and so is other people. I'm not just gonna throw it at him right now, but the accountability measures did not kick in until he moved beyond anti-blackness. And so the only thing I really want to drive here is that anti-blackness is still vogue, okay? And apparently, as long as you're anti-black and only anti-black, you'll stay in fashion. So, I'm not in a position to say that Mr. West has mental health needs. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I am a social worker, but I don't go out of my way to diagnose people. I do hope that he gets the help that he needs, but I also want industry, our culture, streetwear culture, let's have a conversation about inclusion. Because this is bigger than Mr. West. This is within a broader environment that has made anti-blackness acceptable. So that's my two cents on that. So I think that I only have four episodes left. And I know I need to record one of them. So we'll see how that goes. I need to follow up with the guests and make it happen. This has been a fun and enlightening ride. I'm surprised when people tell me that they listen to the Equity Matters podcast. Be like, oh, snap, that's me. I produce that. That's my pet. That is my pandemic project that is fully grown. And so I just want to say thank you to all of you who are listening, who are subscribed, who follow us on social media. Couldn't do it without you. So I'm not going to get sappy here. If you're not following us, you probably want to. That's at Equity Matters Podcast on Instagram and at Equity Matters PC on Twitter. We got a listserv, mostly me sending out when we've got new episodes. But I think I'm going to try to transform it. We'll see what we do with that. Because I am stepping away from Equity Matters, but I don't know if I'm fully stepping away from podcasting or creating digital materials. We'll see about that. I do describe myself as a content creator. I just need to find new content. So more to come on that. In the meantime, take care of yourself. Stay safe. The pandemic isn't over. RSV is on the way up. Take it from me. I'm a parent with a sniffy nose right now. And of course, y'all, equity matters.